Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to the show, Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Vermil. We're recapping the Miami Heat's 108-96 win over the Sacramento Kings on Tuesday night. Recording this just a few minutes after the game just wrapped up after overtime. Miami had a 9-point lead with 6 minutes and 20 seconds left. Let that slip by. Kings tied it to send the game into overtime. And the Heat then went on an 11-0 run in OT to come up with the win. A pretty big win for the Heat. They've been in a lot of these late-game situations lately.
Yeah, I mean, after dropping a close one to San Antonio and getting, well, not necessarily blown out, but letting a big lead escape from them against Charlotte, it was nice to see them kind of hang in there. Even though they did let a lead slip, they showed up in the late fourth quarter, and particularly in overtime, where they really outscored Sacramento. And the backcourt was a significant difference. Guys like Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, and Goran Dragic all came up very big on a night where Hassan Whiteside was limited due to foul trouble. He picked up 3 early fouls in the first half. He sat out for most of the second quarter, and then he picked up a couple quick fouls in the second half as well. And so he wasn't as much of a factor as we've expected and come to depend on him being.
So one of the themes we've been looking at is exactly who steps up late in games. And you know, we had an opportunity against Charlotte to win that game late. We had an opportunity against the Spurs to win that game late. Dropped both of those games. Finally came through. I don't know if anything necessarily changed. Maybe it's just the fact that in those first two games, the Heat were playing playoff teams, and in this game, they were just playing the Kings.
Yeah. Kings team that's on the second night of a back-to-back, too, after having lost. They actually let a big lead escape in the fourth quarter against Atlanta the night before. So, I mean, they may have been a little tired as well.
Yeah, also might be a problem for them too, right? Both two teams that have a problem closing games because... but still, Rudy Gay, I mean, 14 points in the fourth quarter for them was definitely their closer. They went to him every single time. I thought he had a really good... I mean, I'm not unique in saying this. He scored, what, 30 points tonight on 11 of 24 shooting. Had a really strong game, was a bit of a triple threat kind of guy for them. Gave it to him a lot on the elbow, just let him kind of do whatever he wanted to do with the ball, I guess, yeah. Because he's their best shot creator, maybe outside of DeMarcus Cousins, if not better. DeMarcus Cousins also finished the game with 30 points. A huge night for him, too, outplaying Hassan Whiteside. But anyway, yeah, Rudy Gay, 14 points in the fourth quarter, 3 points in overtime to add to that. Was really their go-to guy. The Heat, on the flip side, had 4 guys score for them in overtime compared to Sacramento's 2, and 2 is generous. Aflalo hit a couple of gimme free throws there at the end on a kind of wimpy foul call there under the rim. But so really, they just went to Rudy Gay the entire time while the Heat moved the ball, share the ball a lot. In the game, 24 assists on 37 field goals, so that's a really good ratio there. And so that this idea that we've been looking for a closer this whole time, the closer was the entire team, really.
Yeah, but I'd say that there was a moment there where Tyler Johnson in particular seemed really determined to score with the ball. Like, you know, even Dragic had the ball up as he was bringing it up court, and then he kind of deferred to Tyler, and Tyler was able to create something off the dribble. You know, he had a nice floater there and over time to really push that big lead up there. And that, I think that really changed the momentum and turned it in Miami's favor. Because although, you know, Sacramento hadn't really scored aside from an and-one play from Gay, they really didn't seem like they were, you know, completely out of it just yet. But that floater seemed to kind of you know, foretell what would happen with the rest of the game. And it really shifted the energy, I think. From that point, the American Airlines Arena crowd was energized. The roster itself seemed like they had a little extra pep in their step, and they just seemed to be playing a little better. And then from that point, it was just a matter of closing it out, and they did. A lot, you know, a combination of good opportunistic scoring on their end, but some defense when it mattered most. And that's the kind of growth you want to see after – we didn't see that against San Antonio. We didn't see that earlier in the game against the in the fourth quarter when they let a lead slip away from them, but they were able to bounce back. And again, you know, you were very prescient in this and pointing out that, you know, it was an ongoing theme, who was going to be the closer. And at least you saw a little bit – you saw shades of that, I think, from Tyler Johnson. Although you did see some big moments from Dragic and from Waiters as well. He was the guy who took the big shot at the end. He missed it as regulation ended, but, you know, he was willing to take the shot. It seemed very similar to a play we've seen Wade run a number of times as the clock went out, holding the ball at the top of the key, waiting for the shot clock to go on, and then launching an unfortunate shot that just didn't fall. So if he had hit it, who knows, his ego probably would have set the whole arena on fire. But
I'm glad you brought that up, because it was really interesting to see the Heat go to that and basically just call an ISO for Deion Waiters. Right. Whether or not it was called or Deion called his own number there, I'm not sure. Maybe the latter. Probably the latter. But he did hit a nice two-pointer at with 30 seconds left to tie the game at 91, which was the score going into overtime. So
right.
People,
that might have been the reason why Spoelstra went to. Maybe he felt he had the hot hand.
Sure, and I think people are hating on Deion a lot. But Deion Waiters was hit all four of his first shots for 10 points in the first quarter. I mean, if not for him, that game, the game could have been... it could have slipped away pretty early if not for Deion Waiters. He came out hot. They rode that hot hand. I liked Waiters' game. The whole game I liked. I liked what he was doing. Did he force up a couple of shots? Yeah, but that's the medicine that you're going to have to swallow when it comes to Deion Waiters.
Yeah, and look, the things that he does well are create his own shots. He can also create shot for others. You know, he's an active rebounder. There was a play there where he leapt over two taller players. I think it was Kosta Koufos and I want to say Gay, and he wrestled a rebound from them, and then, you know, he kind of lost control because they were much larger players, but he was able to tie them up, and they called a jump ball. It was late in the fourth quarter, I want to say, and it just, these kinds of things that he does, he can do a lot of things well. He got a big block, I think.
Yeah,
I can't remember, on Aflalo. Yeah, Aflalo, yeah. Who's a really good low post player who uses his length and his size, you know, to position himself. And he turned around for a jumper that normally he'll hit. And Waiters just leapt right up and was able to, you know, have a perfect timing on the ball and just swatted it out of the air. And that's, you get a lot of good things there, you know. And I think, you know, we've seen some of the response because he wasn't necessarily as efficient as could be against the Spurs. But I think a lot of that is existing narratives that we've talked about on a number of occasions. But he has been a solid contributor thus far for Miami.
Yeah, we were going to do that Deion Waiters spotlight later, but we just kind of did it there. 7 of 14 in the game. 4 rebounds, 4 assists to go with his 20 points. A plus 16. Really good game for him overall. He's just going to be one of those guys that just gets, you know, a lot of flack on Twitter, just gets that shame bell over and over again from the Twitter sphere. But we like Deion. We're on the Mario Absolutely. Chalmers bandwagon. We're on the Deion Waiters peninsula. I mean, you and I, we kind of like these guys.
Yeah, look, I mean, the game is fun. And there are guys like Deion and Mario, they certainly keep it interesting. You know, it doesn't always have to be perfect, dull efficiency. We've admired guys like Tim Duncan and others for years who can bring that kind of quiet efficiency there. But you need the chaos bringers every once in a while, and I'm you know, we've been on the bandwagon for a while, or on the peninsula for a while. In fact, I want to say we created it, but you know, we don't like taking credit here at the
Lockdown Heat podcast. We definitely created it. We were the first ones.
Okay,
to
never
say
mind.
It,
we'll take credit. Yeah, you know what else I'd like to bring up though? I got to be honest with you. You know, we've only just started the Lockdown Heat podcast, especially now that the season's in full swing and we're going on a daily basis here. But how much fun is it to be able to recap the games right after they happen so that our listeners get our takes immediately after it happens? You know, they can plug in the morning on their way to work and get the freshest content. No other podcast delivers that like the Locked On Heat podcast.
Yeah, and I won't even limit it to people that are going to work. Even if people are unemployed, they should still listen to this podcast. I mean,
I think everybody should.
Everybody should. Yeah, it's it's been pretty fun. I really enjoy it. Now that we're, what, four games into the season now, I'm really enjoying these recaps.
That's right. Overall themes, I think, for the game. Obviously, you know, the white side issue.
Before we get to that, I think we almost skipped over this, and I want to make sure that we get to it. Tyler Johnson getting an elbow to the face by Costa Kufos.
A
big, bloated European elbow right to the tooth. Again? Like, how many times can this guy get? I think Tony Fiorentino, like, literally laughed at the fact that he was, I'm like, you're the color guy. You're supposed to be, like, I don't know. I guess you can just laugh at it. But
I think it was Aflalo who actually elbowed him there because he was setting a pick. Yeah, I think he was setting a pick, and Johnson came right into it, and he delivered it, like, right to the jaw, almost to the neck area there, and sent him flying to the ground there. And they actually called a flagrant on Aflalo, a flagrant one.
Yeah, I was surprised they called a flagrant, but also, like, there's only so many times that Tyler Johnson get hit in the mouth. I thought it was Kufos. So admittedly, I had to take my dog to pee because she wouldn't stop annoying me. So I took her to pee, and I came back, and I saw Tyler Johnson on the ground. I'm like, oh, what happened?
What did Kufos do?
I looked at the big white guy like, what did you do? but I did get a chance to see, I'm pretty sure, Eric Spoelstra laughing when there was like that break there when they were reviewing it.
Yes.
He was looked at Tyler Johnson and just laughed at him, right? Even though it was a close
one. It was this weird moment on the sideline where like Johnson's kind of checking his gums and looking at there and like looking at it. And you can almost see like, oh, I think my tooth is loose. And Spoelstra's wry humor is like, how can you tell you're already missing a tooth? And then Dragic, who's had like 18 teeth knocked out over the last two seasons with Miami, he's like, hey, come on, suck it up. If I can go and grab a tooth and put it in my sock and keep playing, I think you could play through this, you know? No worries.
You got free throws out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Dragic just got a trip to the dentist and not much else, and blood all over the floor. really nice move. Oh, we should point out Eric Spoelstra's birthday. I think it was nice for the team to be able to give him a win to celebrate on his birthday.
Yeah, happy 46 to Eric Spoelstra. Hope he spends many more years. That Spoelstra, the Fire Spo crowd has really died down, I think, the last few years. I think they either, I don't know if they've necessarily changed their minds, but they might have just given up.
I think they've been directing all their anger towards players that are no longer in the roster, namely LeBron, I guess, and maybe. Yeah, probably we'll get some of it towards. I don't know if we'll get as much.
The Fire Spo crowd just kind of morphed into Team Petty.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis right there. But yeah, he deserves all the happiness on his 46th. So I'm glad for him that he got a win, and I'm glad for us that we got a chance to watch it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Rudy Gay's tryout for the Heat. Obviously, he wants to. Not obviously, I guess, but reports are that he wants to play in Miami eventually, maybe even as soon as possible. And in his tryout for the Heat, so to speak, 30 points on 11 of 24 shooting, 12 rebounds, an assist, and a steal, just two turnovers. Somehow was a minus 11 in the game, but I don't know how much you want to, you know, the Kings lost, so everybody was basically a minus for them. Right. Minus 11 was a little high on their end, but, you know, whatever. So your overall thoughts on Rudy Gay? You ready to trade for him?
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned it because just earlier today I was watching a replay. I'm sorry?
I saw your tweet. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was looking at it earlier. I was looking at the game against Atlanta. And man, I got to tell you, you know, maybe I haven't seen enough of him. Maybe I've just been one to accept the established narrative on Rudy Gay, as negative as it's been. And he looked really good. You know, he's doing a lot of different things. He's versatile as a scorer. He's an able defender. He's long-limbed. He's an active rebounder. We saw that with his, 12 boards against Miami and a much bigger front court, I think. You know, against Whiteside and others, he was very active. As good a defensive job as Winslow was doing on an MVP candidate like Kawhi Leonard just a couple nights ago, Rudy Gay took his lunch. He was really, really good. He couldn't limit him at all. And he was just scoring at will, I thought. You know, he was doing a really, really solid job overall. Yeah, I know, 11 of 24 overall, maybe it's not a great percentage, but it's pretty good considering a lot of those shots were from the perimeter, not necessarily from three-point range, but he scored in a variety of ways. He scored in the low post. He scored from mid-range. And I don't know if I'm necessarily willing to trade for him because, again, especially on a night like tonight when Goran plays as well as he does and he's probably Miami's best asset as far as a trade is concerned. I mean, obviously, guys like Justice Winslow and Richardson, who are on cheap deals, are better assets, but you're not going to get much in return for a guy like that. So I think if you make a trade for Rudy Gay, it probably involves Goran Dragic, as we've talked about on a number of occasions. Yeah. I don't want to trade Dragic for Rudy Gay.
Yeah, let's not dive too much into that because we've been there and I don't want to talk too much about that. But Rudy Gay, 30 points is a season high for him, but 30 points, 22 points, 28 points, 17 points, and 22 points this season so far. He's having a really good year for them.
Now, I did get feedback. 53%
from the field.
I did get feedback from others that apparently this is just his MO, that he just gets off to really hot starts. And then eventually, maybe from lack of interest, maybe as the season goes on, being a part of losing teams, he kind of just says, oh, screw it, I'm not really going to get as engaged or stay as engaged. And then his production eventually might taper off or as other teams start to focus on him.
Yeah, we'll see. I like how Dave Yeager is using him, though. I started to talk about earlier in that triple threat. He'll give it to him in the post a lot. They'll run horns between Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins, one of Yeager's favorite sets that he would use in Memphis. And I know that they went small for this game, for the Heat.
They did.
Using Rudy Gay at the four. I think that might be something that they want to explore more of, because that was their best five players on the court. I think Matt Barnes at small forward, he provides some veteran presence and some moxie to that starting unit that I don't think that they, they do have moxie with DeMarcus Cousins, but it's like Matt Barnes is like a more disciplined version of moxie.
Yeah. Which is funny that we should be saying that in 2016, that Matt Barnes is the veteran moxie on the team. But he had a really rough night, but I do see his value, particularly on the defensive end. But even against Atlanta, he was hitting some big shots, a couple three-pointers there. So he does bring something. He's been the spark off the bench for them, which is, again, weird to say.
Yeah.
But normally they go with this weird lineup of Kosta Koufos at center and DeMarcus at the four, and I think he's obviously better suited at the five.
Yeah, and Willie Cauley-Stein didn't play tonight. He wasn't hurt.
Not at all. No, he wasn't hurt against Atlanta. I think it was just maybe resting him on the second night of back-to-back, knowing they're in the middle of a five-game road trip. They go to Orlando this Thursday, and I think they finish up there at Toronto, I think, later on in the week, which is, ironically, Miami's next opponent this Friday.
Yeah, Koufos might be a trade chip in February and try to get Willie Cauley-Stein some more playing time, but I think that was Sacramento's best lineup. But this is a Heat recap show, so we don't have to talk too much about that. But the Kings interest me for
they do. I know, for good reason. I mean, I know you get a chance to cover them on a couple of occasions. So and they're an interesting team. Look, part of the problem being in Miami, and I know I suffered from this when I lived down there. You know, you don't get to see a lot of these teams that aren't necessarily on national television as much. You don't get a chance to see them. You hear the reports. Maybe if you're on Twitter, maybe if you're lucky enough to have league pass, but even then, you'll get in South Florida, it'll be like a 10:30 p.m. start time, and most often, you're not going to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch the, 25-40 Sacramento Kings take on the 17-50 Phoenix Suns, It's not – you're not interested in watching these teams play and getting a chance to see them twice a year. Yeah, you see some good things from them. So, I mean, they're an interesting team, and I think they're – certainly on the right path, which is not something that we would have said last season.
So, spotlight player. Let's start with Hassan Whiteside. Obviously not a great game for Whiteside. His worst game of the season. Got off to a slow start. Got into foul trouble really early. What was it? He had four fouls in the first half. And
I thought it was three. I don't recall. I think he picked up his fourth like almost at the start of the third quarter.
Yeah, you're right. I'm looking at my notes here. Third foul.
He got taken out, but
first half because he got he was taken out and it wasn't
we had the chance to see Udonis Haslem for his first action of the season. Spoelstra surprisingly went to Willie Reed early on, but I think with the threat of DeMarcus Cousins and the overall size with Kosta Koufos when he plays, they needed somebody who was a little bit more consistent defensively, and I think that he got some good minutes out of Haslem. He put Haslem on there. We saw this a couple of years ago during the Big Three era when Roy Hibbert was really beating us up, and he all of a sudden, despite having Chris Bosh in the roster, he went to, Udonis Haslem to play Hibbert, and he was able to limit him and kind of keep him in the low post. And we saw some of that kind of steady defense from Haslem. So in his first action, a hell of a challenge having to go up against one of the biggest, best scoring centers in the league. a guy who can score from the perimeter and in the low post, obviously. And he did the best he could. Look, he fronted him on a couple occasions and was able to steal the ball from him. You know, he kept him from his comfort zone, which is the best that Haslam can do, considering he's 100 pounds and about 8 inches shorter than Boogie. And it shows that there is some depth when you have like a particular matchup that might work in our favor. Like if this was a guy like more along the vein of Karl Anthony Towns, who's more of a finesse, you know, center, a guy who can, you know, shoot from outside a little bit more accurately than Boogie, maybe it wouldn't have worked as well to put Haslam on him. But this was more of a, I can use my physicality in a way that might hinder you a little bit. And we saw that in spurts.
Yeah, it was good to see him get some run. And definitely, I can see Spoelstra doing that as he has with UD this season, taking out Willie Reed in favor of the stronger, more physical Haslam. But and Whiteside, you know, that early foul trouble I thought really hurt him. Picked up his fifth foul with 7 minutes and 30 seconds left in the game. Yeah. But miraculously did not foul again, even though like him and DeMarcus Cousins went back and forth there for a couple of minutes. Soon after that, when they both had five fouls until DeMarcus Cousins fouled out with six.
He forced him into the foul out situation. Yeah. He was defending him well, and then Boogie warded him off with a left hand as he drove to the hoop, and he was got entangled with Whiteside, and they got called for the foul. I know a lot of Kings fans, you know, were kind of pissed off about it, but to be honest with you, it was a good foul.
Oh, he hooked him. Yeah, absolutely. 14 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks for Whiteside in 28 minutes. Got off slow. You know how I keep track of these should-have-assisted opportunities and stuff like that, and I had 3 of those marked down for him. Only because I usually look at this, and when I'm looking at opportunity, it could have been more than 3. It really could have. Like, you could basically, you can make an argument that anytime DeMarcus Cousins has a position on him, he should probably pass out of it. But that's not what Whiteside's going to do, so I don't count those. Just because if he's one-on-one, I don't have a problem with him putting it up. And really, the way I keep track of these stats, even if he's double-teamed, I don't have that big of a problem with him taking a jumper as long as that the second defender isn't a power forward or somebody with some size, if it's just another guard or small forward trying to get into the lane. I don't really have a problem with it, especially if it's like, you know, in the rhythm of the offense. But I had 3 marked down for here. I probably could have went with a little more, but 3 really stood out. And one really bad jumper that he has a tendency to take. Usually sure early does. In these games, he'll take like one 18 or 19 footer, I guess, maybe just feeling it, seeing if he's got it tonight. And if it doesn't go in, he usually won't try it again. But I have noticed that between Pau Gasol and DeMarcus Cousins, Whiteside's having a little bit of a problem with these centers. Not necessarily fast centers, but centers with really good footwork. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Especially fouling-wise.
Well, I mean, he did have problems with even a much slower guy with nifty footwork than Al Jefferson during the playoffs. We saw him going at Whiteside, and it's just I think he's just a little slow to recover on things like that. You know, he's fast when he goes for the block, but when he has to, you know, keep his feet and kind of adjust and move around laterally, he's not as nimble as we'd like him to be. He's quick to leave his feet, you know, like as far as his timing is concerned.
A lot, probably 4 of his 5 fouls came when he left his feet.
Right.
Like that feels about right.
Right. Yeah, and he should. Like, I think at one point, I think Boogie up-faked him, and he went for the block, and he just wound up landing on him. We've seen that in the past, and like, it's something that he'll continue to work on. But, you know, he had a nice shot, I want to say, in overtime, I think, and he also had a key block there to keep them from scoring. So he did provide a little bit of a boost, even when he was playing with 5 fouls. And you know, it's good to see that development from him, because I don't think that a couple of years ago Spoelstra would have felt as comfortable saying, oh no, I'm going to leave Hassan in there for an overtime situation, especially when Boogie's out. And maybe that's part of what influenced Spoelstra's decision, is that with Cousins out, you can go to Hassan Whiteside and he'll probably have an easier time scoring against him, against Kostas Koufos, rather than Boogie Cousins.
And this necessarily isn't a spotlight on one player, so to speak, but the guard play in general. Especially with Whiteside out, the guards really stepped up. We got 22 points from Tyler Johnson, 25 from Dragic, and 20 from Waiters. I mean, that's most of Miami's points right there. It's more than 50% of, almost 70% of what Miami was able to score in the game. Big night for the guards.
Miami's big 3? No.
There we go. big 3 guards.
Big 3 guards. It was look, they did a lot of things well. I think it was a combination of some quality shooting from the perimeter. You know, Goran Dragic, 5 of 8 from 3-point range. He was just really, really feeling it. Led all Heat scores with 25, and just he seemed really engaged. But he was able to get to the cup if he had to, as he's always able to do. And I think Deion Waiters, as we talked about earlier, that aggression from him is a necessary part of his game, and I think it helps Miami quite a bit, because he complained in the last couple of games, particularly after the Spurs game, that he wasn't getting a lot of foul calls in his favor. And that certainly changed, I think, early on in the first half. He got 7 total free throws, 3 throw attempts. He hit 5 of those. So we saw that aggression in place, and it did work out. Whether some of those calls were deserved or not, whatever, he earned them and he got them. And that's a nice thing to see there, because I think that's a concern, especially when you're looking at a guy like Winslow, who doesn't necessarily, as active as he is in getting to the hoop, he doesn't get a lot of foul calls just yet in his career. Conversely, we saw Waiters able to do that, and that was pretty encouraging. But I think, you know, I'd like to say Tyler Johnson, for all the criticism and everything else that he's received because of his contract, this was very much a validating game for him. You know, he came up big in the clutch, had a big shot, a nice floater in the paint. It really turned a tide there. And just, again, very aggressive. The little things that we expect him to do. Defensively, he was intercepting passing lanes. He was defending one-on-one very well, grabbing rebounds. I think he finished with, 4 total rebounds. Not bad. 2 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. I mean, that's...
He's all over the floor. I mean, he's his energy, you know, you do... The $50 million contract is a real thing. You wonder if these guys are still going to fly around the court and dive for loose balls and all this stuff. I mean, really just like breaks of the game type concerns, you know what I mean? Like where once they get the money, are they going to keep playing the way they do? And he absolutely does. I mean, he almost lost another tooth tonight, you know, because he's got such a knack for fighting over screens. He's so good at it. He's just so sneaky in the way he gets over it. But not to call him a finesse player in that way, because he really does tough his way through these things. Even though he got paid $50 million, I still feel like opponents don't really know how to treat him, because he's only played 68 career games in the NBA this far. They don't really have that much experience playing against him, and I think they're still surprised when he's able to fight over a screen the way he does, or able to lift off and jump out of the building the way he does. Spoelstra after the game just said Tyler really stepped up. I mean, and he did, especially 11 points in the fourth quarter in overtime. I mean, really, really great energy from him.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to see from a guy getting paid that much. And this addresses a lot of concerns. And I'm curious to see if that's actually a valid point where a lot of teams just haven't been able to scout him because of his limited playing time. But it's just like, how can you not account for a guy as active as he is? You know, he's done so many little things so well this season and, throughout his career. We were worried whether or not the contract was going to be something that might temper that enthusiasm and athleticism. That hasn't been the case. In fact, if anything, it's been amped up, and he just had a really, really good game, really carried Miami there late. If he's going to be the closer later on in games throughout the season, I kind of think that there's a good role for him. And I think it's one to, you know, because again, he can shoot from the outside and he can get to the rim and finish with ease. So if he's going to have that closing role, I think it's one that he's very well suited for.
Yeah. And that 3-guard lineup with Dragic at point guard, getting Tyler Johnson off the ball as a secondary ball handler and somebody that can catch and shoot or put the ball on the floor and get to the rim, that's a good role for him. I do want to talk a little bit about Justice Winslow, too, because we really haven't talked about him too much. 3 of 15 from the field, 2 of 5 from three-point range, 7 assists, 3 rebounds, 9 points, but a +8 plus-minus in 41 minutes. You mentioned earlier how Rudy Gay was able to score 30 points, a lot of those points coming against him. But he did play really, really good defense on that last possession in regulation there to force overtime, not allowing Rudy Gay to get anywhere near the rim and forced him to take a pretty deep three-pointer. Mm-hmm. Overall thoughts on Winslow's game?
The shooting continues to be a concern. It was weird because it seemed like he was shooting well from the perimeter, right? He had a couple three-pointers that he
got. 2 of 5, and I want to say most of those three-point attempts came from that right corner. They were really getting him the ball there in the flow of the offense. Three-pointers that you definitely want to see him take from the easiest, most efficient spot on the court in that corner, and he wasn't able to connect on many of them.
Right.
Still 2-5. Not bad for him, but.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, if he, you know, if he's able to maintain that percentage, that's 40%, that seems very unlikely. But then it seemed like shots in the paint that he normally will hit, he was just a little off as far as his overall mechanics. That's going to be an ongoing concern. He wasn't as aggressive, but on a night like tonight when the backcourt was carrying most of the load in that regard, I think it's okay. And you know, look, there's still going to be growing pains for him. We expect him to be the leader on this team, the main facilitator and things of that sort. But for now, it's more of a kind of helping out on occasion thing. And, you know, I think everybody's going to be able to take over that mantle at some point during the season. We're going to see Dragic do it. We're going to see Tyler do it. We're going to see Deion do it. And it's nice to have a guy like Justice who can do it. And I think he probably, I mean, 7 assists sounds like it's probably a career high for him. So that's a good outing for him. And
He fills things up, man. Like, the 7 assists is huge. He got a steal in the game. Only turned the ball over twice despite handling the ball a lot. Solid. He was bringing the ball down the floor a lot, getting a lot of those Goran Dragic threes that he hit that you talked about earlier. Started with Winslow initiating the offense. I mean, as a ball handler, he's really come a long way. I've got his shot chart in front of me because I want to get these numbers right. 2 of 4 from the corners. It's not bad. Those are all, right. Two of four from the corners. Only 1 of 5 at the rim. One of ten basically from 2-point range, and 1 of 5 at the rim. That's not concerning for me, just because I know he's been converting at the rim at a 60% clip this season. So this is more to me, maybe just being out of rhythm, just having a bad shooting night, which is going to happen for a 20-year-old. You know, small forward. That's what's going to
happen. Yeah, and despite the fact that Cousins isn't much of a shot blocker, he certainly takes up a lot of real estate in the paint. And Kufos is a pretty big – I think he's a legit 7-footer as well. So, I mean, they've got a big front line there. And it's surprising. I mean, without Cauley Stein there, that would have been even bigger, I think. So it's something to be concerned with. But, I think active, good, not a great night from him, but, you know, showing a lot of different things. I think one thing that we were remiss in, I don't know if you were going to bring it up or not, is – the Levi's power forward belt.
Oh yeah, I forgot to do that. The Levi's, we're sponsoring it by Levi's now. I forget.
I don't know. We get so many different sponsorship opportunities, but we're still looking for more if anybody's interested.
Yeah, these are involuntary. We don't actually have Levi's, so the power forward belt is still open. my Levi's are held up by the power forward belt, or actually Luke Babbitt's is. He probably wears Gap jeans though. I think you're right. 10 points.
Actually, he might have like the knockoff Walmart brand, like dad jeans kind of thing.
Oh, dad jeans. Yeah, that's a good one. Arizona jeans. Just looks like
nice.
JCPenney brand. 10 Ooh. Points, 3 of 9 from 3-point range, 1 rebound. That's basically the highlights from his stat sheet. He didn't jump off the page. Like, look, this is what Luke Babbitt's going to be. He's going to hit 3-pointers all within the same few minutes. The guy is pretty streaky, or he has been this season so far. He does space the floor well enough for the Heat. +5, +minus in the game.
Mm-hmm. All of his field goal attempts were for three-point range, too.
Yeah, which is what we're going to...
We talked about that. Yeah, we talked about it last time, that we didn't want him necessarily driving, although we thought, you know, it was set up because of his shooting, and you want to be able to mix and match it so you're not just camping out there. But today was a different, you know, thing for him. He started off hitting his first couple of three-pointers, and then there was that stretch there in the third quarter where he missed like three in a row, and Tony Fiorentino on the broadcast pointed out that his shot looked a little flat, that he wasn't getting his legs into the shot. And then I think he hit one late in the fourth quarter to help push the lead up for a bit. And it was from the corner, and it was a nice looking shot there. And so, you know, it was a good solid game. I think, you know, Udonis played the center position. Derek Williams again did not come off the bench. James Johnson played a little bit, wasn't much of a factor. I think he brought the ball up. He was athletic in that sense, you know, looked to facilitate a little bit, but he wasn't really much of an issue. I think he didn't really do much production wise.
Yeah, but, you know, James Johnson didn't do enough to warrant getting the power forward belt, so it stays with Luke Babbitt, who's had it for, I think, the entirety of the regular season so far.
No, I think against Orlando, James Johnson had it.
That's right. You're right. We got to keep better track of this belt.
And we didn't do it against Charlotte.
We didn't?
No, because it was a Friday night game the first week of the season. It was a Friday night game, so we didn't recap that one.
So that stays with whoever had it before, James Johnson. He just
keeps... Yeah, so now it's actually then. It's two games to James Johnson. Two games to Luke Babbitt. Who will have it for the tie-breaking fifth game? Sponsors, this is your opportunity.
Don't let this go away.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we hit most of the notes. One thing I did want to ask you is, you got to imagine the GM travels with the Kings for a few games, and if he's going to travel with Vlade Divac, right, if he's going to travel with them, this would be a game. Do you think him and Pat Riley have had dinner tonight, maybe had dinner after the game at all, maybe some conversations, took advantage of this face-to-face?
I wouldn't have said Riley, maybe Andy Ellsberg, who I actually happened to see in Orlando when he was there for the season opener, and Riley, actually. But I saw both of them, and I would say Ellsberg is the more active guy as far as, you know, talks and things of that sort. Maybe he would have engaged in a little business talk with Vlade. That would have been an interesting conversation there. Yeah, I'm not so sure. I don't know if Divac would have traveled with the team. They probably had somebody from the front office representing them there. But yeah, it's an interesting
opportunity, right? Like,
yeah.
Hey, our power forward didn't look very good. You put Rudy Gay at power forward. We like how you did that. We like what you did there.
You didn't answer the question you asked me, though. How do you feel about it? Is this a trade scenario that you're likely to embrace?
No, I don't want it.
You don't want Rudy Gay at all on the roster?
No.
Okay. Not really. You've given up on this season. You're looking forward to developing the players, the younger players that they have, not necessarily a one-year rental.
Yeah, man, I'm with you. Like, I don't want Rudy Gay. I just don't want that, man. Like, as much as I like Deion Waiters, like, Rudy Gay, like, he's enticing, but this is the story of his career. Like, I don't want to deal with that noise. I don't want it. I just, like, no, man. Just, like, I'll stick with Babbitt the Rabbit. And
well, I'll offer this, and you know, you can dismiss it if you want to. You know, when I had a chance to talk to Derek Williams, you know, I couldn't help but think about how much crap he's gone through at the start of his career, like going to a Minnesota team with Rick Adelman, who had lost a family member and took a leave of absence. And then, you know, the coaching situation was in flux there. And then he got traded to Sacramento, which was, you know, he had Tyrone Corbin, then Michael Malone, then another guy. I mean, you know, George Karl, sorry. Then he went to the Knicks and Derek Fisher, who got fired, and Kurt Rambis. I mean, he's going on his fourth team and eight coaches in less than five seasons. And that's a hell of a lot to deal with when you're a young player like that. And so for Rudy Gay, I know he spent a lot of that time in Memphis, and then he got traded to Toronto and now to Sacramento. But Sacramento's not it's not exactly known for salvaging your career. So, I mean,
not exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. So I think, maybe given the stability that we're looking at. Look, we look at Miami as being a good place.
This guy was the same in Toronto under Masai Ujiri. The guy was the same in a good Memphis team.
He's always business. You really trust Dwayne Casey? You think Dwayne Casey is as good a coach as Eric Spoelstra?
No, but it's a stable organization. Like, if he's looking for stability, Toronto is stable as anyone. And Memphis has been stable for years with that group. It's been like the same starting five for like forever until this season. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't want to. Look, would he be better than what they have right now at power forward? Yes, but
yes.
Would, like, I don't. You can't trade Dragic for him. That's insanity, complete idiocy. And that's only been we said that before the season, and that's only been proven more so twice over since the season started. But even with the way Gay's been playing, which has been good as we noted, unless you could trade McRoberts and Wayne Ellington for Rudy Gay, I'm not doing it.
I don't know if this was something that we even considered, but would you package like Dragic and Whiteside for Boogie and Rudy Gay?
No.
No.
I'm also out on Boogie this year.
Really?
I talked to him in preseason, wasn't feeling it. Not liking his body language this year. I'm like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Whiteside is just more mature at this point. I think he's got better body language. I think he's, as much as we have issues with him chasing blocks, I think he's more committed on the defensive end than DeMarcus Cousins is.
Oh, for sure.
Give me Whiteside at this point. I'd rather have Whiteside. Plus, the Snapchat game is way stronger than Boogie's. So,
yeah, that's a good point. You're right on the Boogie Cousins thing. Like watching him against Atlanta.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Terrible, right? Just like literally had his hands on his hips in the middle of plays. Like, and what was that like little cat nuzzling thing he was doing to Whiteside? Late in the game, like what? He's just a weird. He's too weird, man. Like Whiteside's like not weird. What's the word I'm looking for? He's almost like erratic. Outrageous. He's just kind of like, you know, he does it with blocks, right? Like he's a little bit on the third rail there, but DeMarcus just, I don't like his attitude, man. I don't know, man.
Wow, you're getting older. You're getting conservative in your old age. Thank God that we have Dion here, or else you turn into a Trump supporter overnight.
No, God, no. And that said, like, so on board with Deion Waiters. Like, I don't know. Really, people, if you ask me for my type as far as a basketball player, I have no idea. I just know that I'm out on DeMarcus Cousins and Rudy Gay, and I'm in on Deion Waiters and Mario Chalmers.
Okay. So, yeah, I also want to add this. I know we're probably going a little long here. Did you see when Udonis first came into the game, and it was during a free throw situation? I think Boogie was shooting free throws, and he lined up next to Matt Barnes, who gave him like pats on the chest, like saying, "Yo, you know, the veteran guy here." Yeah. Like, "Hey, what's up?" You know? Yeah, much respect, right? Yeah. It was kind of odd, yeah. But at the same time, cool, because it's like Udonis. But I don't know if I necessarily want respect from Matt Barnes.
I mean, that's like just straight up street cred, right? Like,
that's OG
if Matt Barnes
right
thinks you're cool, like you got a smile on the inside a little bit.
Yeah, the guy who's fought with practically half the league is like, no, you're cool, man. I dig you. I dig your style, dude.
And you know how Haslam's awesome is he didn't flinch when when Barnes started reaching towards him.
Yeah, he does not flinch. Yeah, he was just adjusting his mouthpiece as he's wanted to do. It's awesome.
I think we got to all our notes. We usually end this with notes, but I think, I mean, I got all my little random notes out of the way except Hassan Whiteside with his double double tonight, 14 points, 11 rebounds. His fourth straight double-double, tying Ronnie Cicely for the longest streak in to open
a
season. So
the spin doctor.
The spin doctor, followed by Agent Block. Oh, God, we got to get a better nickname for him.
Jeez. Can't believe you went there.
I thought the Blocktopus was better, but that seems to have fizzled out. I liked Blocktopus because of his long arms. I thought it was apt.
It sounds a little weird.
True.
It makes me feel ooky to even hear Blocktopus like that. I'm sorry.
All right, we'll figure it out. The one that does it with blocks. All right. Well, that's all we got today. That's all we got for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Audioboom, TuneIn, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or decide to sponsor the Power Forward Belt. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com. David, do you have anything? I should ask you this more. Do you have anything coming out that you want to plug?
A couple of different things that are kind of on hiatus, but, you know, I've got an interview with Derek Williams I'm hoping to get published at some point. And, you know, other than that, just continued. I did a little write-up on Rodney Magruder as the latest gem that Miami's discovered. And, you know, just ongoing writing throughout the season. Oh, that came out through today's fast break this morning.
Oh, excellent. So go look out for that. For me, I'm going to plug, I did a little video breakdown on Justice Winslow's game against the Spurs, nice. How he kind of picked up steam there. That's up on allyoucanheat.com. I like that one that I did there, so little plugs there. All right.
Excellent.
Well, if you aren't subscribed to the show already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.